This is the Graybar Sports on a Sunday morning.
Goldschmidt swings and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Milliken's win! Milliken's win!
Now from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
Ooh. Hot one out there. Hot one. Gonna be hot today. Cardinals are not here. The Cardinals are in Minneapolis taking on the Twins. There's a lot of things going on around St. Louis, though, on this August 25th, the last Sunday of August. You know what that means. College football week one has begun. We have a big-time schedule coming up on Thursday, now let alone Saturday, which will be very busy. But Thursday, look at all these local teams playing on Thursday. Lindenwood at Kansas, the 22nd-ranked team in the country. Murray State at Missouri, the 11th-ranked team in the country. Eastern Illinois at Illinois. At 8 o'clock, Illinois is not ranked. Will they be at some point? I don't know. They seemed pretty average to me last year. They're going to have to show their fans something and see if they can build that line back and get themselves some playmaking ability at the quarterback position. I think they can. I think they do have some work to do, though. Missouri's going to be pretty good. Missouri has a tremendous wide receiver trio. They have a tremendous quarterback, and they have a good running scheme that I think they can replace Cody Schrader. We'll see how good that defense is. And there are other teams playing, too. I mean, Southern Illinois is going to be at BYU on Saturday night. Southeast Missouri State at New Mexico State. That'll be happening on Saturday night. So there's plenty going on. Illinois State at Iowa. On Saturday morning, Iowa's the 25th-ranked team in the country. There will be a lot. Already a college football game yesterday, Florida State upset by Georgia Tech, 24-21. The 10th-ranked team in the country goes down. But with this college football playoff, a 12-team playoff, you can recover from that. So it's not like Florida State. I mean, the way it went last year for Florida State, they're done. They went undefeated in the regular season and still didn't make the college football playoff. So this is a good situation for a school like that. Very good for Missouri. Missouri's schedule is very favorable in the front half and not so much in the second half. Murray State, Buffalo, Boston College, Vanderbilt are your four home games before the bye. Toughest of that group, I would say, is BC. Got to be a little careful there. They have been upset specialists through the years. They play Florida State, if you want to get a scouting report of them, coming up this Saturday. Then you get a bye, and then it gets tough. At Texas A&M, at UMass, should be no problem. Auburn at home, at Alabama, Oklahoma at home. What a back-to-back that is, with a break in between Bama and Oklahoma. At South Carolina, at Mississippi State, and a home against Arkansas, who always wants to play you tough. So it should be interesting for Missouri, and it should be, you know, when's the last time you said this about Mizzou, that if it's not a 10-win season, fans would be a little disappointed. That's amazing to even say. A 9-win season would be realistic. An 8-win season, I think fans would be like, I thought this was a college football playoff team. They were hyped to number 11 in the country. So there's a lot on Missouri. I mean, Missouri will not be off the radar anymore. Those SEC schools have some of the best coaches in the country. They have the means to pay coaches a lot of money. They get paid a lot of money to review film of you, and they will find ways to beat Missouri. There's going to be pressure on Mizzou this year, but they should be okay early. It's that second half. They need to stay healthy and stay the course and change when necessary. As you've noticed, I've spent the first 4 minutes of the program talking about college football. I'm like avoiding this Cardinals conversation, but I will not. I will have Ollie Marmol, the Cardinals manager, here in just a few minutes. It was a tough one again last night. I mean, this has been a very difficult season to take in. I thought Sonny Gray put it very well after the game. He seemed a touch emotional about it, too, because he returned to Minneapolis, a team that he played very well for last year, pitched very well, second in the AL Cy Young Award voting. But he said, you know, it's the same thing for me over and over and over again. You could say that about the Cardinals, really. I mean, their offense just has been inconsistent. And for him, pitching-wise, on the road, he gives up home runs. 16 home runs on the road, only 4 at home. 20 home runs given up by Sonny Gray this year. And for him, it has been one inning, is what he said, and he's right. Most of the time, it's one inning that blows up on him, and that's what happened yesterday. A 4-run, third inning did in the Cardinals as they lost the ball game by a final of 6-0. We'll talk to Ollie Marmol about it here at 10:15. 10:30, much different story for SLU soccer. They won 2-0 at home against 7th-ranked Indiana on Friday night. Before that, the women tied BYU 1-1, BYU 4th-ranked team in the country. Really good atmosphere at Herman Stadium, back-to-back days. We'll talk to Kevin Kalish, the head coach of St. Louis University soccer, at 10:30. 10:45, we'll get into some college football talk with the head coach at Lindenwood. Because, as I mentioned, they go on the road. They got the toughest task of anybody. They have to go on the road and play Kansas, 22nd-ranked team in the country, and they will do that on Thursday. And Jed Stugart is the head coach of Lindenwood. He'll be with us at 10:45. Lutz Fahnensteel of City, tough one last night. They end up in a 4-4 draw after having a two-goal lead twice at Portland. He's with us at 11:15. John Mozeliak won't be able to make the show today, but we will talk some Cardinals. We'll take your calls and messages to the best of our ability. That'll be at 11:30, 11:45. Todd Perry, Executive Director, Pujols Family Foundation. Big event coming to Topgolf. Big-time player coming to Topgolf in Chesterfield. His name is Albert Pujols. He will be there for his fundraiser, and there are still spots available, by the way. Think about that. You and your friends or your company could buy a bay at Topgolf in Chesterfield. Might be right up against Albert Pujols in his bay. Maybe engage in a little competition with the big fella. So that's coming up at 11:45. We'll give you details on how you can get tickets to that. Ollie Marmol is up next. This is Sports on a Sunday morning on KMOX.
Now, the Manager's Chat, presented by Siteman Cancer Center. Siteman Cancer Center, national leaders in cancer.
Welcome back. Sports on a Sunday morning on KMOX. Tom Ackerman with you. Pleased to be joined by Cardinals manager Oliver Marmol in Minneapolis. Good morning, Ollie.
Good morning. How are we doing?
Doing well. I saw the official transaction a little earlier this morning. Yvonne Herrera gets the call back to join the team. Of course, that comes at a cost to Wilson Contreras. Man, what a tough break last night as he gets hit by a pitch from Pablo Lopez and breaks his finger. I know that's a difficult one, not only for the club, but, man, you feel for him, don't you?
No, no doubt about it, man. He's had such a tough year when it comes to getting beat up. You look at the amount of time that he missed with the blow to the forearm and then this now in between those injuries. I mean, he's swung the bat really well, and I was really pleased with the way things were headed as far as like him working with the pitchers in game. Like, he just, man, he was taking some really good steps in the right direction. So for this to happen now, I mean, it's definitely a blow. We'll get Herrera here. Actually, just arrived, and we'll take our shot.
Good. And Herrera, I know, gets the opportunity and has a good bat. Well, one thing you can say about him as he's continued to work on his defense, he looks, plays the part of a hitter very well. He has presence, doesn't he, at the plate?
Yeah, he's done a nice job of making some adjustments offensively, and he's put together some stretch of some really good swings. And he's a confident hitter, man. He really is. It's to drive the baseball, takes his base hits, has a really good approach. So can't disagree one bit.
As for Wilson, he had that big smile on his face as he was delivering that news to reporters yesterday. That's him. I mean, he is just, you're around him every single day. There's something infectious about his personality. He is a competitor, but I think he also, he sees sometimes, tries to pull positives out of what has got to be a very difficult situation for him. Is that how he is behind the scenes?
Yeah, I mean, his personality is, there's only so many things you can control, and this isn't one of them. Him getting hit by a pitch and having to go back on the IL is part of it, and he looks at it in that exact way. Is he frustrated after the game? Absolutely, and the fact that he won't be able to contribute down the stretch, but he's not going to hang his head and draw negativity out of it at all.
So he'll try to be there for everybody and continue on. Pedro Páez, my gosh, I mean, you talk about bad luck. The guy takes a wild pitch in the neck yesterday. I mean, I'm sitting there like, now what are they going to do? Brendan Donovan's the emergency? Is he the emergency, Donnie?
I would have had a tough time putting Donnie back there yesterday. But thankfully, I mean, it did get him pretty good. It took him a minute to gather himself, but he's able to kind of finish that game, and then he's in there today.
Good. So Pajes is your catcher today, and Ivan Herrera is Ollie Marmol just arrived. Good to hear that.
He's getting early flight, getting here. Actually, I just saw him arrive, so not knowing if there's going to be delays or anything like that, I'd rather him come off the bench today, and then we'll go ahead and schedule his time behind the plate moving forward.
Sure, gotcha. What about Sonny Gray? I mean, I watched his post game yesterday with reporters, and he really seemed to take it hard. It's not just because he's pitching in Minneapolis. We all know he's a former Twin and was very successful last year, but he said it himself that it just feels like it's the same thing over and over. On the road, he's given up 16 home runs, and it's one bad inning, though, overall, that seems to bite him. How do you evaluate that?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And there's some randomness to it, and then there's some stuff on his end that he's continuing to work on as well. So there's a combination of things there. But to your point, the Atlanta series and the Cincy one, and now here with two more, but a lot of those homers have come on the road.
Yeah, I don't know why that is. I obviously, that's the big question is why that happens to Sonny Gray, who's been an established great pitcher in this game. But it also shows you that the other side is doing their homework. By the way, speaking on the other side, that Pablo Lopez is something else. Now, I know we've talked about offense and issues that you've had, and we will, but you got to respect what Pablo Lopez brings to the table. He's pretty tough. He was good.
Yeah, he was on his game yesterday. I mean, did a really nice job of just getting guys in between that sweeper and then beating them up top, the sinker fastball. I mean, he just did a really good job of mixing enough to get guys off balance. And then certain guys just overpowered him at the top of the zone. But as far as having a pretty impressive outing, Lopez did that.
Yeah, he did. And by the way, if anyone's curious, of course, he didn't mean anything by the pitch to Contreras. Just got away from
him.
Yeah, you could see he was down in a crouch, you know, during the whole thing and said he was sorry. And they knew each other
well.
No,
that pitch just got away from him. There's no intention there whatsoever.
Yeah, totally. So back to let me touch on this real quick. Giving up home runs, going back to Gray, but just overall, you know, in that three-game win streak that you had, which was terrific, you beat the Brewers twice and then you beat the Twins in game one, didn't give up any home runs in those three wins. What do you see there in terms of just the club in general giving up the long ball?
Yeah, some guys are better than others at it, to be quite honest. I mean, you look at the Pallante game, he's not going to give up a whole lot of contact that's not on the ground. Those guys pounded the ball straight into the ground all day against him. King comes in after that, gets several ground balls. So that game kind of explains itself. Miles did a really good job of just not missing over the heart of the plate as much as we've seen in other outings. I felt like he mixed a lot and pitched to the edges and got a lot of defensive swing and soft contacts. And any of the ones that were hard against him or Pallante were also at people and on the ground. So both those guys did a nice job of inducing ground balls.
And the Cardinals end up in a situation here where they are going to try to win another series against Minnesota. Obviously, you know the uphill climb that you have to make the postseason, but this is about grabbing game by game, and you have a chance today. And Eric Fetty is your pitcher. How do you see Fetty when he's most effective? How does he get the job done?
Yeah, he talked about his last outing. When I took him out, he's like, man, I feel like I've yet to establish my changeup the way I wanted to over the last several outings after coming over to us. He's also a guy who's a pitch maker, man. He's going to have traffic from time to time, but he's going to find a way to make the big pitch and get out of those innings. And we've seen him do that. But he's yet to feel like he's had a game where it's clicked the way prior to the trade deadline.
And, you know, we've talked a lot of pitching here. So let me shift to this offense because again, the Cardinals are where they are because of a collection of things. You know, things don't go right or health or poor play or whatever it is. But I think if you were to point to one general area of the team and why it hasn't gotten to where it needs to be, it has been the inconsistency of the offense. Would you agree with that? And where do things stand right now with your offensive production? How do you feel about where you are? Has it been a repetitive thing for you?
It has all year. I can't disagree with that. If there's a knock on what's been the tough part of our season, that's it. I don't, there's not.
We may have lost Ali Marmol there. James, you got him, or did he? Is it disconnected? He's still there. Okay, let's see if we can reestablish Ali Marmol from Minneapolis. Somebody may have pulled the cord out of the wall. No, I'm just kidding. It happens sometimes. We'll try to get him back and see if he's still on the line. James, our producer, we'll try to reestablish with Ali Marmol, and then we'll let him go, because Yvonne Herrera just showed up in the clubhouse. We want to make sure that he gets back to work for this 110 game. The Cardinals taking on the Minnesota Twins this afternoon. We'll have the pregame at 12:15 for that 110 first pitch today. The Cardinals 11 games out in the Central, 6 back in the wild card, 1 game under 500. Then they come back home. They'll be taking on the San Diego Padres for 4 games, and there is no question that it is crunch time every single game going on right now. Ali Marmol says to give him a call back. We will do that, and we will take a quick break. Back in a moment on KMOX. Oh, let's go back to Ali right now, actually. Ali, before we take a commercial break, we want to stay on time and make sure you get back to your players. But thank you for reestablishing contact with us. Sorry about that. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, not sure what happened. I was answering the offense question. Yeah, yeah. I couldn't agree more with you. That has been the consistent thing that has come up all year, is our inability to just get the big hit with runners in scoring positions. We've created enough opportunities to do so, but when we are in those second and third, nobody out, one out situations, we just haven't really done a good job of tacking on runs, man. And you look at up and down the lineup, which guys are doing it well, which guys aren't. And at the end of the day, like, it just hasn't been collectively good enough for us to go on a run. When you look at teams that are going on a run, that's a big part of it. I feel like our pitching has done exactly what we would have expected them to do up to this point, as far as our rotation being where they're at, and then our bullpen being a strong point of our season. But going into April, going into the beginning of the season, we never would have thought that our offense was going to be what it is today. So that has been a little bit of the issue.
Yeah, a curveball, to pardon the pun, you know, just something that has not been expected, no doubt. And before we go, just last thing, you know, I'm a big fan of, and I study leadership and coaches, and one that I've always respected is Nick Saban, the 7-time national champion. And one of the things that he said a long time ago, he learned it from his high school coach, actually, is that it's not always about the calls that you play, it's about the players that you have in those positions to execute those plays. And that doesn't mean that he's not going to put those players in the best position to succeed. I guess what I'm asking you is, when you are using different combinations of lineups, but also in the course of a game, do you change what you do when it gets down to this time of year? Are you taking maybe more risks? Are you trying to just throw something that you believe in, that maybe you could change the course of how things are going? Do you try to strike lightning in the bottle? Are you gambling a little bit more this time of year, or do you stick with how you feel you evaluate over the course of a season?
Depends how you're asking the question, why you're asking the question. Give me an example and I can give you a direct answer.
I guess just in general, like if you, let's say in a game, so you have a situation and you're like, you know what, let's bring this person off the bench. I don't have a specific situation in mind, but would you pinch hit, go against the book, so to speak, against the grain? Do you mix and match lineups just to see if you can make something happen? Do you manage in that way?
I feel like we've mixed and matched lineups as much as you can. When you look at our pinch hits over the last week, 3 of them have been homers. Yeah. So I'm not sure what else you would like. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, sometimes it does work. Yeah, I think that's what I mean, is that sometimes, you know, you've been doing that and those things do happen, and sometimes not. So I guess the point is that at this point of the season, how do you create offense as a manager? You have to find the best combinations.
Yeah, creating offense is an interesting theory there. You're going to run your guys out there that are your offensive players and put them in the best position to have success from a matchup standpoint. Certain guys you match up with to give them the best shot. Certain guys just need to stay in the lineup in order to get hot. And if they get hot, the team will go. And if they don't, then it's just that'll be the frustrating part of our season. But when it comes to just trying to make things up and push in a way that doesn't make sense, like we're going to do everything we can to put these guys in a position to have success. And what I can guarantee you is we'll take our best shot. But yeah, that's where we're at.
I appreciate you as always. Thank you for the time, especially on a game day. And we'll let you get back to it and try to get a W today against these Twins. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Ollie Marmol, Cardinals manager, with us on KMOX. It's 10:30. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, we'll be joined by Kevin Kalish. He is the head coach at St. Louis University. Men's soccer, what a win they had on Friday night against Indiana. Back in a moment on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports on a Sunday morning.
Goldschmidt swings and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Gray Bar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Milliken's win!
Once again, from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
Billikens win indeed. SLU wins on Friday night at Herman Stadium against Indiana. 2-0 against the 7th-ranked team in the country. The women tied BYU, the 4th-ranked team in the country, the night before that. Joining us is the head coach at SLU, Kevin Kalish, is back on KMOX. Coach, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I was there for both games, and what an atmosphere both nights. I mean, really terrific. The fans came out. I know that you're proud of your team, but let's first talk about that facility and that atmosphere. That was something else.
I tell you, it was an unbelievable environment for a college soccer game for both the men and the women. And, again, it shows why St. Louis is such a special place for soccer in this community.
You were ready to go for that one. Your team gave Indiana all it could handle. Tell me about before that game. I mean, I see it from the outside. I'm out there on the field. We've got the Herman Trophy there. You know, there's a lot of pomp and circumstance, big crowds. Indiana brought a pocket of fans. SLU fans come out roaring. What is it like moments before a big game like that, keeping your team focused?
Our preparation all week was quite good. You know, I think we had that right balance between being having the right level of intensity, but not overdoing it from a nerves perspective. You know, I just felt like we found that really good balance. We were calm, we were confident, but we were also very intense. And I thought, again, from a work rate perspective, I was really proud of the amount of work they did on the field.
You just really handle them defensively. Indiana could not find a way to get a clean shot or a shot, really. How did you do that?
Yeah, just the players. Yeah, the players, just the work rate. You know, it starts with our Matt Roble and Luis Lara, our two forwards. They just did a tremendous amount of work, and I think everybody kind of fell in line after that and just kind of did their job. But just our collective work rate, our collective mentality as a team was quite good on the night. And yeah, now our challenge is can we make that the standard?
You had a 1-0 lead at half. How was halftime compared to pregame? Same focus, same attitude going into half number two?
Yeah, I think we got some really good leadership. Obviously, Joey Mayer is a guy who's been around and understands how to win games, and I think he's provided some really good leadership in the locker room. Just stay calm, to stay focused, and really kind of focus on the next 45 and just keep executing. And I think one of the strengths of this team is our depth, and I thought you saw some guys come in and really keep the level extremely high. And that's what it takes to beat teams like Indiana. I thought it was definitely a full team effort.
You have great respect, of course, for Indiana and its program and all that it has done, 8 national championships. But here's SLU, still with the most national championships in the history of college soccer, 10. You had 18 championships between the two programs. And I know that is something that not only the school but you as a program hang your hat on. When you're out recruiting, and your recruiting has been excellent, what are you telling people about St. Louis and its tradition? Because, Kevin, you know, even though they haven't won a championship since 1973, there's just this aura around SLU soccer that's a little bit different from other programs going back in those generations, like an understanding of the sport, would you say?
100%. Yeah, it's there's a tremendous legacy here, and not only from all the teams that won titles, but also just all the players that have gone on and played at the next level. And you know, soccer's important here, you know, and it's built into the fabric of our community. And I think players see that. Players want to play in front of 6,000 fans and play in this environment and try to get that 11th star. So I think it's our challenge now. Can we go and climb the biggest mountain? I think that's what top players want to do. They want to be challenged, and I think we're just going to focus now on each and every day and trying to be the best versions of ourselves that we can. But if with the players we're bringing into the program, we're going to put ourselves in a great position to do so.
The facilities upgrade to campus, what has that been like for you? Yeah, especially in terms of performance, but also in recruiting over the last few years.
Yeah, it's a game changer, right? You know, obviously our Billikens Soccer Legacy Center, their Laughlin Family Champion Center. I mean, these facilities are as good as any in all of Division I. So from a soccer perspective, if you're a player and you want to, just again, not only the Herman Stadium but also the training fields and everything you have here, you know, there's no reason why you can't reach the highest level. So we're very fortunate. We're very blessed. We're very grateful for everything SLU gives us, and we're definitely want to carry the flag for SLU as well.
We mentioned the women's team. Katie Shields comes out with, she gets a storm in her first game against Kansas City and ends up, they have to call it a scoreless draw. Then a tough matchup against BYU. She ends up in a draw 1-1. You've got to keep your eye on this women's program, though, if you're on that side, don't you, Kevin? I mean, they have things together. They've got some big-time players on that team.
They really do. I enjoy watching them play a ton. And, I was at the BYU. I was actually at both games. And they've got a great team. They just got to keep, you know, I know the Katie will get them peaking at the end of the year. And it was a really good performance against BYU. And I'm excited to watch them today against Mizzou. And, yeah, Katie and her staff do an unbelievable job.
What a time this is for St. Louis University soccer and basketball is coming here quickly with Rebecca Till and Josh Schertz. Good times on campus, and I can't say it enough. And final thing for you, Kevin, is the atmosphere that I saw on Friday and on Thursday, just with the youth soccer players that were surrounding that facility and the kids playing this sport, it has to really make you feel good about the future, the present and the future of this sport here in St. Louis.
Yeah, obviously St. Louis City plays a big part of that as well. And just, you know, obviously we now can watch the highest levels of the game played each and every week. But yeah, there's the amount of talent in this market, the unbelievable amount of coaches at the youth and high school levels. It's like soccer paradise in some ways, right? So, you know, we got a great thing going in this town, and we just got to keep from our perspective, just got to keep recruiting those St. Louis players, and good things will happen.
Kevin, congratulations on a great win over Indiana, 2-0, and best of luck the rest of the way. Of course, we'll stay right here with you as the home of the Billikens. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Thank you. Kevin Kalish, head coach of St. Louis University men's soccer. I'm telling you, I looked around that place and thought, you know, we talk a lot about Busch Stadium and about Enterprise Center and about, City Park and all that they've done for the city. Here we are in the middle of the city in Midtown, and there are 6,000 people there on Friday night, and there were about 4,500 there on Thursday night, and they are having a good time. They've got their families here. They have kids. There's, you know, barbecue, grilled food, smoke going up into the air, and adults drinking beer and having a good time. I mean, it really was impressive how they set that all up at Herman Stadium on back-to-back days. So congratulations to SLU on that. We'll take a break, and speaking of tailgate smoke, it's time for college football. We'll talk it over. College football week one begins. We'll look at the schedule, and in particular, we will talk to the head coach at Lindenwood University as they visit Kansas this week. It's next on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports on a Sunday morning.
Goldschmidt swings and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Gray Bar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Billikens win! Billikens win!
Once again, from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
Welcome back. Sports on a Sunday morning on KMOX, and we have college football week one upon us. It is time, as they had the big game yesterday with Florida State losing to Georgia Tech 24-21. Look what we have coming in just a few days. Thursday, a trio of local teams in action. 11th-ranked Missouri will play at Faro Field, 7 o'clock kickoff against Murray State. The last check, they have not sold that opener out, which surprises me a little bit. I know it's Murray State, but it's Missouri that you should be paying attention to. They're the 11th-ranked team in the country, and Eli Drinkwitz has been pushing that himself, trying to get that place completely sold out. I have not seen a notification that it is, so there are still tickets available to go see the Tigers. Illinois will be playing at home on Thursday night as well. They kick off an hour later at 8 o'clock against Eastern Illinois, the Fighting Illini embarking on the 2024 season. And joining us on the line, they will also be playing. They're taking on nationally ranked Kansas. The 22nd-ranked Jayhawks will play at Children's Mercy Park. That is just outside Kansas City. The reason for that is their stadium on campus at KU is under construction. They'll be playing Lindenwood. And joining us on the line is the head coach of the Lindenwood Lions. We welcome in Jed Stugart. It's great to have you back on KMOX. How are you?
Hey, Tom. Good to be with you this morning.
It's great to be with you. Well, here you go. Another season, and it's time to play. The Lions will be. How has this transition been for the Lions into Division I football?
Well, you know, I think, you know, when we took on this endeavor, you got to kind of lay out a plan. You got to lay out a direction. I feel like, you know, we kind of know when we started this, there's gonna be some growing pains into that. And the best thing you can do is just try to put out a plan to do that through recruiting. You know, you got to kind of flip your whole team in a matter of a couple of years, you know, or you can, you know, so we've kind of been doing that as you've kind of graduated out some Division II guys. We've been able to start adding some young Division I and some transfer guys. So, you know, we feel like we're on track. You know, our goal was after 2 years, you know, we wanted to be right around 500 in those first 2 years between the first year and second year. And we're just a game under that. So we feel like, you know, there now we start year three, which is good. We're a better football team this year than we were last year, a little bit more mature, but we also play a much tougher schedule. So you just got to kind of, you know, you just got to keep grinding and keep getting people to buy into your message and your direction. And we're going to get there.
You're playing Kansas, number 22 in the country. Tell me about the Jayhawks. Obviously, that is a big challenge ahead, but it has to be an exciting one for a lot of reasons.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a great opportunity for our kids. You know, we're playing in a different venue, which will be pretty cool. We've actually been in that place, you know, that's where they used to host the D2 National Championship. So we've actually been in that place and seen it. It'll be a fun atmosphere. Kansas. I've gotten to know Lance Leipold for a lot of years. We kind of came up, used to coach against each other when he was at Omaha, Nebraska, and I was at Northern Colorado. So we've known each other a long time. Really, really good football coach, doing a great job there. And then, you know, it's our opportunity too with our guys to go play a really good football team. And we're that underdog story, and everybody knows that, but. Just the enthusiasm, the excitement of playing a game like that against a really good opponent should be a fun opportunity.
Absolutely. And then you're going to come home and you're going to be playing some home games. I really like your stadium. I think that's a cool setup right there. You got that stadium, and then it's kind of tucked into a hillside in a lot of ways, and the campus overlooks it. You know, you're not just sitting in the seats, but you can watch the game from way up above that end zone from like a plaza outside of one of the school buildings. I mean, it's pretty neat little bowl you have going on there.
It is. It was, I think of small college, you know, I think NCAA.org a few years ago rated it. Our stadium is, you know, we were in the top five of just aesthetically beautiful stadiums. It really is a great setting. It's great. It's great to, you know, you can really hear the crowd and everything because we are kind of in a little bowl setting there. It is beautiful. We're really blessed with our facilities that we have at Lindenwood.
Does it get pretty noisy? Can you hear them?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I think that's kind of why, you know, the way that sets. And of course, we've got a great student section that's behind our goalpost there on the north end that has figured it out. They've had a lot of fun. We have a a great crowd and a great student section that gets after it a little bit. It's really a fun game days. We have really commend our administration that's really put a lot of time and money into making our pregame tailgating before the game the atmosphere is awesome. They bring in live bands. We've got vendors, the entertainment, bouncy councils for kids. I mean, they've really taken this to a whole different level with our tailgating experience before the game. And our team, we get to come and walk through that after our pregame meal and celebrate with our fans and our cheerleaders and everybody out there. So it's made it for a neat team walk. It's a great atmosphere to come watch Lindenwood football at home, no doubt.
Yeah, and I feel like St. Charles County does have a lot of pride in this. And there's a lot of community engagement going on, isn't there, in St. Charles?
100%. We're blessed to I know our kids. We had a bunch of football players that went down on Main Street and the streets of St. Charles to all the businesses here a couple weeks ago and just went store to store. They were welcomed, the enthusiasm, staying acquainted, keeping that relationship with our businesses and our community members in St. Charles. And we feel really blessed and fortunate to have that kind of support. It's a great community, obviously.
And Lindenwood has had some really good players go on to play very strong professionally. And if you're going to watch one player, folks, I would watch number 78. That big fella, Gareth Warren, is 6'6", 332. The offensive lineman is on the Senior Bowl watch list, Coach Stugart.
Yeah, he's been, we knew probably a couple of years ago that Gareth would be a guy that probably is going to have a chance, and to see kind of where his preseason ratings been to make that watch list is a big deal. We've had four or five scouts that have come through practice here last week. Came from Hawaii, was a great rugby player growing up, played football as well, but so he's highly athletic and an incredible kid, just a great leader in our team and high character kid. That'll be fun to have another one. We got a current one of our former players right now, John Harris, that's playing with the Dolphins, and to see John doing really well there. And we kind of see some prospects on the horizon, and that's kind of what's been fun about this is our recruiting and our development. That's one of the things we really made the choice to do. I know you could, we really wanted to recruit high school kids, develop them, and grow them into this move to Division I because we knew one day they're going to grow up. We chose not to really go heavy transfer portal, to get a quick fix. We felt like we wanted to sustain a longevity of a program. And it's kind of fun to see these guys growing up. And, we've got some prospects on the horizon. It's exciting. It's a good program, a good culture program right now. We're really excited.
Well, I'm really looking forward to your season, and I wish you the absolute best against KU, the 22nd-ranked team in the country, and Mizzou fans probably will be very much in your corner on Thursday night at 7 o'clock when you go to Kansas City. Thanks so much for the visit, Coach. We appreciate it.
Tom, thanks for having us on, and have a great weekend.
You too. Head coach at Lindenwood, Jed Stugard, with us. We'll be back after the news on KMOX.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.